Okay, so we're live. All right. So tell me, DR, and keep in mind that you are being recorded. Everything you say can and will be held against you. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a raisin bagel and some orange juice.
Well, here's some bacon and orange juice. Okay. Mariah, what did you have?
I had blueberry waffles.
Oh, pulu. Good for you. All right. So we got our morning meals down. All right. 5-4. 5-4. Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 30th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
All right, well, good to have you here. We're also joined by author, educator, and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well, thank you.
Oh, good, 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 good. So Christmas is over. We're rapidly heading into the end of 2018, and as all good people do, we pause for a moment to think about what kinds of things happened in 2018. The 2018 was a year of lots of events. I've got a list about as long as my arm of things that happened that are relevant to climate stuff, but it seems as if this was a year where the realization of the immensity of the climate issue came through in the news, right? D.R., you were talking about the campfire. Tell me about the campfire and what was going on there. What's the background on that, and why is it a climate thing?
Yeah, just a devastating series of wildfires that were very expensive and very deadly that just sort of tore apart California. And this being a sign of, you know, I believe it was California, outgoing Governor Jerry Brown of California, basically saying that, you know, this is the new abnormal, essentially. And this is an example of how pricey it's going to be, you know, for all the people who talk about how much it's going to cost for us to reduce emissions. This is how much it's going to cost if we don't,
right,
essentially.
Right. And the argument being that the drier than normal conditions in California, or the abnormally dry conditions in California, contributed to all this burning, in addition to policy and everything else, but the climate did not help, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, and I think that originally we were talking about 700 people being missing. I think that number got whittled down a lot, so there's many fewer people. But this is a circumstance where the fire just blew through the town and burned the entire town down. I mean, that's kind of a scary thought. But in fact, it's a thing that has been connected to climate, right? And there's this whole question, Mariah, do you know much about it? You've got a technical streak. This question of attribution, when they try and say that a particular event is related to climate change. Yeah, I know that So for many, many years, the standard thing to say was that no event can be said to be caused by climate change. It's all statistically distributed, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the modeling now has come to be to the point where they can say that the likelihood of a particular event, the intensity of a hurricane or this kind of storm, firestorm out in California, it is so improbable without climate change that essentially you can attribute the whole thing to climate change, right? Maybe neither of you have seen that kind of analysis, but it's...
No. Yeah. Didn't the Bulletin of American Meteorological Society put out its annual investigation into weather extremes, and the science is much more robust now than it was in 2011. Mm-hmm. So scientists are definitely able to say with greater certainty that climate change is increasing the risk of certain extremes.
Right.
So it's not... And a lot of times it's not necessarily that climate change is causing a storm, but it's exacerbating the storm. It's making it worse.
Right. And so I think the thing, the campfire out in California, I don't think they can make that attribution, but I think they made that for one of the big hurricanes, a couple of big hurricanes down in Carolina, right? One of the other big climate-related slap you upside the head with a 2x4 kind of event this year that happened was the big hurricane down in the Carolinas, right? And this is when it came ashore and rained for days and days. I mean, it's kind of like Hurricane Harvey in Houston. I get my story right there, you guys. I mean, went in and all of the, you know, the hog farm pens and all the slag heaps by the river got so sodden that they started to leak into the groundwater, right? Isn't that the story, mm-hmm. DR?
Yes, and there was a great piece in Inside Climate News basically saying that after the devastation, both inflicted by Hurricane Florence and Hurricane Michael, there are residents of North Carolina who are basically backing away from the denialism at long last. But it takes this sort of extreme weather to make people realize that it's not a hoax.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that came through there as well, or is something that for me has come up more this year, is the environmental justice question, that the people that get hit the worst with these kinds of after effects of the hurricane are the people least able to deal with it. You know, if you have any kind of economic wherewithal, you're not going to live next to a pig holding, basically a pig poop holding pen, right? And so when that gets full of water and you're there, that's too bad for you. Yeah. So I think that...
Yeah, the justice issue is definitely something that we've talked a lot about this year. And when you look at, I think another issue where the justice, we talked a little bit about it, was the gas, the pipeline explosions that were in Andover, Andover and Lawrence, Lawrence being disproportionately affected. And people, you know, just up until a couple of weeks ago, people were still without heat.
Yeah,
right. And if you have means, you can go somewhere and stay in a hotel for a while. But if you don't have means, you're kind of in a different boat don't have heat in your house.
And there was something in downtown in Boston. There was an apartment complex or something that got cut off from gas the night before Christmas, I think. I guess I don't have to admit I don't have the details. But all the people there, Christmas Eve, right, they're stuck in the cold, and the grid company is going to give them all an induction heater for tomorrow morning. Like, man, not very fair.
Well.
But, I mean, I think that the point we made about the – so let's switch for a moment and remind everybody that last October – in the towns of Lowell and Andover here in Massachusetts, I think it's Columbia Gas, which is the company that distributes the gas, for whatever reason, I'm not sure they fully know yet, for whatever reason, overpressurized the lines in the aging gas distribution system and proceeded to blow up a bunch of houses, right? And a bunch of those houses were in, as we say, in Andover, which is more affluent, and in South Lowell, which is less affluent, and North Lowell.
Lawrence? Was it
North
North
Andover?
I think Lawrence.
Okay. Lawrence.
Yeah.
And the slow pace of repairing the gas lines, and the whole question of whether or not they should just rip all the gas lines out and put in electrify all of those homes so that they don't need the gas anymore. I mean, wouldn't that be the step in the right direction?
Right.
But there you go. We'll see. I mean, there are continuing questions about gas pipelines. I think the other thing is pipelines have been a big issue in many ways across New England, across the country this past year. And I suspect going into 2019, there'll be similar questions about stopping pipelines. Right. I guess the other big climate event. So we've got the fires out in California. We've got the hurricanes in the Carolinas. Here in Boston, just about a year ago, in January of last year, we had a winter storm called Grayson, which, of course, Grayson's naming winter storms is a specialty of the Weather Channel, has no, you know, official backing, so they can pick any name out of the hat that they want. And this one was called Grayson. But that storm grew in intensity, and we put up a show about it called Bombogenesis, because that was the term that was being used at the time. And the funny thing about that, maybe you two guys remember, but there was flooding in the right outside the aquarium in downtown Boston, right? There was like 3 or 4 feet of water in there. And my memory is that really frightened a lot of people, or brought home to a lot of people in Boston just how vulnerable the city is. Right? Either you guys remember that story?
Yeah, it was. I think I remarked at the time that it gave a new definition to the term "the shape of water."
Yeah. Well, the I guess so. All this stuff that we can see, right, after a year in perspective, you look back and see these big events. There were probably others that we can't even keep up with. We tend to be very North American-centric in terms of the kind of weather events we follow. But those big three events were pretty clear. And on top of that, we got two separate technical scientific reports on climate change this year. One from the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a United Nations organization, and one, the other one from our own U.S. federal government with a mandated, what is the word, four-year quadrennial.
The National Climate Assessment.
Yeah, it's quadrennial. Like every 4 years they put this thing out. In both cases, the reports essentially said climate change is happening now, and we have something like 10 to 12 years in order to reduce emissions, or else we're going to end up in serious deep trouble. Right? Do either of you guys remember that those reports?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think they were big wake-up calls in a lot of ways, although it was also scary. I was just reading an article about, I mean, it's not funny, but there's a calling network that you can call in for climate grief counseling. Because it's called the Good Grief Network.
Really?
that was started after the UN report was released, as the IPCC report, which offers the 10-step program to help people deal with collective grief, because a lot of the young people in particular have, you know, who read this report and heard that by 2040 there's going to be calamitous effects if we don't do something now, are sort of like, well, can we please do something now, and are feeling a little bit powerless. And so there's these systems.
The question of whether or not there's a psychological component, I mean, I think there is. There's certainly, probably the three of us have wrestled with the question of just how terrible this can be and how do you manage that, right? And if you think you're starting out your life looking forward to this as a prospect for your retirement years, it's not good. It's not a good place to be. And so for both kids and I think for adults, there is a psychological component of grief associated with what we see happening. And I guess I'll jump on it first and say activism is the way to address your grief, right? There's a Kate Aronoff, I think is a climate scientist, right? And Bill McKibben talking about hope. Hope being not an excuse to, not some kind of fairy tale thing of you hoping for, but it is what you do as you're working to change things. As you can have hope even in the face of despair, as you try and work on stuff. But I guess that
the audacity of hope, if you will.
Yeah. I guess one question though that I've been in this long enough to know that in 2009. Right, 2009 was supposed to be the big critical year that we had to act, or we were all screwed. Right, that was the Copenhagen year. Right, that came and went. Now we've had several other successive short-term deadlines. Right, when our so-called president was elected, you know, we have 4 years where we're going to go over the 1.5 degree limit. Now we're being told by this report we have 12 years to act, or else we absolutely do not have. We have a terrible world. I guess I'm starting to think that, you know, talking about timelines is a false kind of thing. It brings in a sense of urgency, but we're not going to go off a cliff. I mean, just the longer we do bad things, the worse it's going to get. And we're already, in some sense, over the edge, and that we need to frame this in terms of the urgency of acting now because it's all on a sliding scale. Does that make sense to either of you guys?
Yeah, you know, so Catherine Hayhoe was interviewed on Living Lab Radio and said something similar, where she said that she doesn't like this 12-year deadline approach because it sort of creates a sense of like, if we don't get it done by 12 years, then we might as well just give up. And right. That can be really demoralizing. And so she said she says, for me, it's a case of not just trying to divert the worst, but recognizing that the planet really is in our hands and we have the ability to choose our future. And I think those are powerful words from Catherine Hayhoe, is a climate scientist and a director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University. So she's quite a powerhouse for climate issues and climate voice. And I think those are really important words to think about, that we have to just keep telling ourselves that we have the climate in our hands and we can do something about this.
Well, I think that is a fitting way to end our retrospective on 2018, that we've got the whole world in our hands, as somebody once said, and that it's up to us to do something about it. Anyway, What we'll do is put up links to some of the stuff we talked about on the show at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can catch up with us on Facebook at /massclimateaction and click through to the show there. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using any of those famous distribution channels now, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, et cetera, et cetera. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.